On this episode of Still Loading, L is real. 2401. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this new episode of the Still Loading Podcast. I am your host, Josh Koval, and today it is the first episode of Mario Month. We have the month we wait for all year long, but this month, unfortunately, it's only going to be two episodes, and I will get to the reason why for that in a second. Normally, it's four, four to five, depending on how many weeks are in the month of March, but this year, it's only going to be two. It's going to be just every other week. I guess technically possibly three. Hold on. I should probably look at that ahead of time so I know how many I need to record. No, it's only going to be two. So two episodes this month. And with me, as per usual for Mario Month, is Casey. Casey, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing very well. Thank you for having me, as always. I always enjoy my time here.
Thank you for coming back on once again for Mario Month. Now, to those who don't know, we are actually recording this on December 4th of 2020. So we are 3 months ahead of schedule. And the reason for that is the same reason why there's only going to be two episodes of Mario Month this year. It's because I'm going to be a father and I won't have time to record weekly episodes. So I'm going back to bi-weekly. Actually, you already should know this by now because there would have been four episodes out prior to this even coming out. But yeah, so there's only going to be two episodes of Mario Month this month. Sorry about that, but that spaces out more Mario games for future years so we can squeeze more into each Mario Month in subsequent years. So yeah, but for this Mario Month, what the original idea was going to be 3D Mario games, the first couple 3D Mario games. So instead of doing four of them, it was going to be Mario 64, Mario Sunshine, Mario Galaxy 1 and 2. This year, it's just going to be Mario 64 and Mario Sunshine. We're going to do Galaxy 1 and 2 another year, but 64 and Sunshine, the two S's, and we are starting off Mario Month with, of course, the first 3D Mario game, Super Mario 64. So before we go into any nitty-gritty things, Casey, what are some of your earliest memories of this game?
Sure. So the first memory, or I should say experience, that I had with Super Mario 64 was back in August of 98. So growing up, I had the Super Nintendo, and that was my exposure with Mario World, Super Mario All-Stars. And growing up during that time for the console wars between N64 and PS1, I had a PS1. So mm-hmm. I never had an N64. My cousin, he was in town for the weekend, I believe, and it was his birthday. And my parents went to Best Buy and they bought him They bought him a Nintendo 64 bundled with Super Mario 64. So it was some sort of bundle that Best Buy deal. So he got it. We were back at my place and we were playing it. And honestly, I was very frustrated with it because I did not like the N64 controller. Mm-hmm. You know, so used to, Super Nintendo for Super Mario games. And I was not a fan of the analog at the time. So I tried using the D-pad and only to be upset that the D-pad was useless in that game. So, here I am, an 8-year-old, throwing a little temper tantrum. But that is my earliest memory with it. I know a lot of friends that I had growing up in middle school, they all had N64s and we would play. That was one of the games that we would play. So that was kind of my most exposure to it. I didn't end up getting the game until 10 years ago. I bought it myself with an N64 and then played it that way.
It's funny, my earliest experiences was I didn't actually own this as a kid. I had an N64. I did not own any of the Mario games actually for the Nintendo 64. I didn't have Mario 64. I didn't have Super Mario Kart 64. I didn't have Mario Tennis. I didn't have any of these for my N64. I don't even think I had Smash. So I did play Smash at other people's houses, but I did not have any Mario games for my N64. And it wasn't until years later, I've said this, I don't think I've talked about this for a while on the podcast. I know I have mentioned it in some of our earlier Mario Month episodes, but my first exposure to Mario, like I played it in passing at friends' houses, and I didn't really touch it too much once I started collecting. For a long while, Mario, I don't want to say it was like a dirty word to me, but it was something that I never understood why people liked it so much. And a lot of that was naivety, I didn't know how important the series was, and I didn't know how fun they are. Now I'm a huge Mario fan. I don't know where the switch flipped, but it changed somewhere. And the first Mario game I actually beat earnestly, I've mentioned this before, was Super Mario World. And I've kind of jumped around the series. So about a year ago, to bring this back to Super Mario 64, about a year or two ago, I played Super Mario 64 for the first time. Actually, we were talking off mic how we both have our copy signed by the voice actor of Mario, Charles Martinet. And it's such a great experience at that convention.
It really was.
So, and I finally finished playing, I believe, before he signed it. And I don't know what took me so long. I love this game so much now. I love the music. I love the visuals. I know they're very dated. It's the N64. They're going to be very dated. But that was my first experience, was actually playing it almost without any nostalgia goggles. I played it for the first time 2 years ago. So I went into it very open-minded, like very eyes unclouded by nostalgia, with thoughts unclouded. So, and I loved it. I legitimately loved it. It was pleasant. I was pleasantly surprised by it.
No, I totally know what you mean. And this, I may have told you this before in the past. I know our one friend, Tim, who you had on the podcast, he knows this, and I may have told you this. I'm in the minority with this, and this may come as a shock, but this is actually one of my least favorite Mario titles. And the reason why, a lot of that has to do with my first experience with it. However, that being said, it definitely grew on me over time. The one gripe that I have with it today is just the camera angles.
Yeah.
That's the only problem I have with it. Other than that, it's a charming game. I really appreciate Nintendo pushing the boundaries and you know, being innovative. I mean, obviously you'll go into that in more detail, but that's what I wanted to put out there right now.
No, I think that's fair though. That's a fair criticism, especially I mentioned it before on other episodes, but when games went to 3D, a large chunk of the gaming audience got alienated. That's why for the longest time, up until Super Mario Odyssey, Mario 3D games routinely sold less than their 2D counterparts. So Mario games continuously sold less until New Super Mario Bros. Came out for the DS. That was huge. And then New Super Mario Bros. Wii, for the Wii, obviously, same type of genre, but now you can have 4-player co-op on the 2D side-scrolling, or 2.5D the side-scrolling with that. That was huge. It sold more than Super Mario Galaxy 1 and 2. I don't know about combined, but at least them separately, definitely. So the 2D Mario games have historically just sold significantly better than any of the 3D, and I think a lot of that has to do with kind of what some of your criticisms of it were. Just it is a lot harder to manage. And I honestly think the reason why Odyssey sold so well, we talked about Odyssey a while ago, like two, three years ago now on the show. But I think the reason that Odyssey sold so well and it's so popular is that they finally perfected the 3D controls for Mario. And not to say the others weren't good. I actually think Mario Sunshine has the worst controls personally. Just because the slightest movements, he'll just go crazy. Like, he goes so far. But we'll get into that when we talk Mario Sunshine. Mario Galaxy, I think, had great controls, but it was so different. You know, there was motion controls, and you had to shake the Wiimote, and you had to move the camera, and there you had to aim the Wiimote to pick up star bits. It was just a very different, it was a very active platforming game that you had to do. Besides just controlling the buttons, you actually had to move your arms and shake things. Shake it like a Polaroid picture, as the children say. No, that's the nerdiest thing I've ever said in my life. That's not even true. That song is old. So yeah. Children don't say that.
They're like, what the hell is a Polaroid?
I know, right? Those are retro, so they're probably popular. Yeah. But So I can understand your criticisms of it for that reason. In fact, the camera specifically, I have a note about that. But we'll before I get to that note, because it's a pretty interesting fun fact, the first thing I want to talk about is the controls of the game itself. Now, Mario is known for its controls. That's one of the things they focus on the most. And Mario 64 is no different. In fact, the N64 controller was designed around the ease of play for Mario 64 specifically. All other games be damned, if it played Mario 64 well, that's all they cared about. And yeah, sorry, were you going to say something?
No, I said then that's all that mattered to them. Yeah.
They tested so many different types of controller styles. There is actually even a motion controller that they tested out. Like it kind of wore around your wrist too. I didn't learn too much about it, but there was a prototype that was being developed before obviously the N64 came out. This was just an idea for one, but it was going to be a motion type of thing that you wore around your wrist that could detect movements and stuff like that. And apparently it played super well. Like it worked really, really well. But it just, not a lot of people understood it. No one could quite grasp the controls, which makes sense. Developers can understand it because they developed it versus people who don't know anything about it. But they settled with the N64 controller, and the movement of the game, I don't know. What do you think? Do you think it feels smooth? I understand you hate the cameras, but like, I think Mario's movement is really solid in this.
Yeah. So, I mean, definitely for its time, and even playing it today, like I'm going back and I've been playing it for the Switch from the 3D All-Stars version. Yeah, I think it's well done in the sense of that. I feel like the 2D controls are a little bit more fluid, easier to control. That being said, you know, this is an entirely new style of gameplay. So for this being the first, kind of like the blueprint,
mm-hmm.
very well done. Very, very well done.
I mean, they had to figure out how to make an experience in a 3D space when that's not yep. something that ever existed before. And some of the interviews I was reading, they were talking about how in 2D platformers, everything has to be so precise, you know, the pixel to pixel perfection. And you had to match what, you know, like check Mario's arc of the jump so that way you can determine how far the player will be able to jump and if they can nail it on just enough of a pixel or something along those lines. With 3D platformers, though, it's a lot harder to gauge that distance because it's, especially in those old games, because it was that forced perspective, that depth of field, how far away, like when you're jumping straight into the screen, how far ahead is that ledge? And it's a lot harder to gauge that distance when you can't see the whole thing. You can only see your like weird top-down perspective of it. Mm-hmm. So they had to make it a lot more lenient with players because they had to make the landing a lot more lenient so you didn't have to be nearly as perfect as you would in a 2D Mario game because it just wasn't fair. Like it was just so, it was so hard for players to kind of gauge that distance. And the team had to do a lot of playtesting. One of the things I read was that they split the team up into two different halves. One was with development and the other was with just player testing. So literally it was like a 15 or 16 man team. I think it was like a 15 man team. That's all the people that were on Mario 64.
Oh, wow.
15 people. And they split them up in half. Half of them were working on, you know, tinkering with controls, making levels. And the other half was just making sure the feel of Mario was good. And they brought kids in to play and to play test it to see what they thought. And one of the funny things I was reading that Miyamoto was happy because the kids were having fun. But he was a little concerned because he actually brought his son in as one of the kids who were play testing. And his son kept trying to climb up this unclimbable wall. And he just would not stop. He tried like 12, over a dozen times, it said in the interview. And it was to the point that Miyamoto started to question the intelligence of his son, and he was worried about him. He was worried his son was dumb.
Oh, boy.
Mario 64. You heard it here, folks. Mario 64 makes children dumb. No. But, yeah, they spent so much time having to perfect the movement. That was the thing they were focused on the most. And that's what a lot of Mario games are. They focus on the movement a lot because Mario is movement. That's the whole that's what makes a platformer, you know, running, jumping, whatever, other sliding, diving, all that other stuff, like all those different mechanics. And in the original Mario games, you only had running and jumping and power-ups. Mm-hmm. You definitely see in this game they limited the power-ups in this, because how do you account for every possibility with a power-up? Like, if they have the flying thing, right? Like, how much of the game could you break if you constantly were able to fly, or you constantly had the fire power-up, or you constantly had this and that? So that's why they had timers, so that way they could specifically space out, and, you know, how far can this player get under this timer, so that way if it only gets to a certain area, they can't break the game later on,
right?
You know, what were some of your favorite, sorry?
Oh, no, I was going to say the other cool thing that they did too was the depth perception. You know, this is the first time with them working with this, you know, since it's not 2D, especially when it comes to like jumping over gaps, like especially in like Bowser's Castle. And, you know, with the sliding, like if you're sliding in Super Mario World or Super Mario Brothers 3, the worst that can happen, depending on the level, is just you fall down into a pit and then you lose a life, where here you have to like control where you slide. You know, otherwise mm-hmm. you'll fall on either off either side. So they did some pretty unique mechanics there.
And then when they were designing levels, one of Miyamoto's earliest influences was watching his pet hamster, of all things. So he would watch his pet hamster kind of roll around in a ball. And they originally wanted the levels to be like the 2D Mario levels, where there was a flagpole and you'd have to go from point A to point B and get to the flagpole. And that's how you complete the level. But it just didn't feel right, because it was just, it's very much like, if you ever see those 3D renditions of 2D Mario levels where it's just this long hallway with nothingness on the sides.
Yeah.
And it's just, it looks kind of cool, but it's kind of ridiculous at the same time. So that's what it kind of seemed, based off what I was reading, that's what I pictured. I don't know if that's what they were actually thinking. So they decided to go with a more sandbox approach, and that's where that hamster idea kind of came in. That he just watched his hamster go all over the place and roll around and explore different things. So they kind of took that same approach and applied it to the level design. And that's kind of why in Mario 64, instead of an individual objective per level, you had multiple objectives in each level, and that's where you collect all the stars. And, you know, there, I don't know how many of the stars are on each level. What is it, like 7 or 8? Hold on.
Yeah, I know there's 120 total. I think there are 7 with the inclusion of the 100 coins, which might be 8.
There are 6. There are 15 stages. Each stage contains 6 stars. Sometimes Mario collects stars directly, sometimes after defeating a boss, passing certain secret places, or collecting 8 red coins. There's also an extra star when Mario collects the 100 coins in the stage. Mm-hmm. This is from Unofficial Super Mario Guide, which, what is this website? It's sca.ch/Mario. This website looks like something straight out of the 90s.
Hold on, I want to take a look at that.
sca.ch/Mario. Wow. I'm hoping they're right. Oh yeah, they are. So there's 6 stars to find, plus the extra star per level, plus the extra, like, for the 100 coins, and then an extra 15 stars hidden throughout Peach's castle.
Well, already I can tell you this is fake. They're saying Mario was invited by Princess Daisy to her castle to have cake together.
No, that's true. That's Daisy says that in the beginning.
It's Peach.
Oh, yeah. I'm so dumb. Peach. And I claim to know video games. You're right. Well, and this game is actually the first time they called Princess Peach, Peach. It was Princess Toadstool for years.
Yeah.
And this one was, it was signed like Princess Toadstool, Peach. And then they transitioned it over to Peach.
Yeah.
And this was the first game that on home consoles that Mario was voiced in. There was the PC games, which I think we even talked about during 2 years ago, I think, because we did Game Boy games last year, and the year before that was all the Mario PC stuff.
I think last year, this time last year, was
it was Super Mario Land and then Wario Land. That was the ones we covered,
right? But didn't we do the Super Mario Christmas special?
Yes, we did. We did. This one, the listeners will have already heard it, is the Sonic Christmas Blast.
Nice.
That's this year. So with my friend Jordan, which turned out really well. I finished, I still have about, at the time of this recording, I still have a little bit more to edit, but you listeners will have that 3 months prior, 3 or 4 months prior. But no, so there's 120 stars total, like you said, and there are 6 stars in each level, plus an extra star for the 100 coins that you collect. And then there's 15 stars kind of strewn about in Peach's castle, in Bowser's castle, whatever. I think it's Peach's castle that Bowser takes over. So they gave you all those different objectives. So it kind of just lets the player explore. You don't have to get the stars in the order that the game tells you to, because every time you jump into a level, actually, let me finish talking about the levels and then we'll go into the castle that is the hub world that connects all the levels. But you would jump into a level and it would give you a little hint as to where the next star could be. And some of them are very direct, like 6 red coins, find all the red coins. Or some of them, and they usually show you where the star is. So you have an idea visually in the level before you have to just go around and explore randomly. But it does not limit you to searching or to getting the stars in that order. If you're able to get the 6 red coins prior, then you get that star and it jump like you'll, and next time you go to a level, you might see there's a bunch of like opaque stars in between signifying like, hey, there's a bunch of other ones that you didn't get yet because you were so smart. You got ahead of the curve.
Yeah. It's not, yeah, exactly. It's that you can just essentially get any star within the level. It doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, back to back.
No, you're right. And that just gives the player, like, here's a crazy thing to think about. This is the first 3D Mario game, and they gave players a sandbox. So this is one of the first 3D games, 3D platformers, period. So this is new. This is brand new to other players. And they give the players so much freedom. They trust the player. Nintendo trusted the players so much to just let them explore that you didn't see that in games. I mean, you saw it more back then, but you know, like I'm thinking more the last, like 10 years ago, like the, everything was tutorial to hell and back. Like there was just so, it was so heavy on tutorial. There wasn't really much of a learning curve because they just gave you everything. And in this, they just give the players all this freedom just to do whatever the hell they want and explore the world and figure it out. Like it, when I was playing it a year or two ago, I was just blown away by how much there is to do in each level. But yeah, it just blows me away that even now, someone who's as jaded, a 31-year-old jaded man like myself, who has experienced so many different games, just like a couple of years ago, still felt that same level of joy of just like, this was just fun to play. What are some of your favorite levels? Like, what were some of your favorite levels that you played? I know you weren't a fan of the camera, but are there any levels that stood out to you?
I didn't particularly have a favorite level. The one I have the most memories with is the Ba-Bomb Field, obviously. you know, yeah, the lava world's fun. Can't stand TikTok clock.
I'm not a big fan of it either.
Yeah, I'm not really too knowledgeable when it comes to the individual levels, because this was a game that I didn't really spend too much time playing. I did beat it, but it was like 10 years ago. So I'm actually going back to play it. Like I said, I'm going back to play it again through 3D All-Stars. I have 57 stars now.
One of my favorites, but it was also my least favorites, is the Tiny Huge Island. Because yeah, it was a cool idea of like the shrinking and growing Mario, and like it kind of took that idea of like the mushrooms from, I think you even use mushrooms to grow. You go down a pipe and it like makes you large. But they took the mechanic of the mushroom that makes Mario grow in all the 2D games. Since they didn't do that in this, they kind of incorporated that mechanic into an entire level idea. Different areas were only accessible when Mario was tiny versus large.
Yeah, played homage to the previous Mario titles, like Mario Land 2 in the Macro Zone, where he's mm-hmm. all tiny, and probably
Super Mario Brothers 3.
Yeah, World 4, I believe. Yeah,
something like that. I forget which world it is.
I think it's World 4.
I just like the idea. I just didn't like how it was executed. I think I just didn't understand it. I need to replay that area again because I just could not understand it for some reason, but. One of the things that I wanted to talk about was the hub area that led to all these to these 15 different stages, and the way the game is broken up is that you have the way the game is organized is that there is Peach's castle, and you can explore, as you explore around the castle, that you see all these different paintings, and you jump into the paintings, and it kind of does this cool ripple effect, which I loved. When I was a kid, that ripple effect captured my imagination. And I'll go into that more in a second, but you go into the levels through there, and then it tells you, oh, okay, this is what star you have to collect now. This is the next star on the list. Obviously, like I said before, you don't have to adhere to that specific order. You can go with whichever you know, which rewards experienced players because they don't have to follow that order. They can just go in and be like, yeah, I know all these, and then just do the ones they want to do. Hence why speedrunning, watching speedruns of this game is so entertaining. Have you ever seen the speedrun of this game?
I've seen a couple, and this game has been played and analyzed and broken down like so meticulously that everyone knows, well, I shouldn't say everyone, but the professional speedrunners know exactly what to do. Like all of them. It's insane.
It's so good to watch. If you listeners out there, if you ever get a chance, this will be 3 months or 2-ish months after Gamestone Quick is over, but keep an eye out for any Gamestone Quick event. If they have a Super Mario 64 speedrun, it's one of the most entertaining speedruns you'll watch. Super Mario Sunshine is also fun to watch. Galaxy, pretty much any of the 3D Marios are really fun. I like the 2D Marios as well, but 3D Marios are fun because they're easier to break. There's a lot more weird glitches. Mario 64 specifically has like that backwards long jump up the 1,000 stairs. Like it breaks. Like you can beat the game without collecting the certain number of stars needed by doing this weird backwards long jump that like breaks through the program. I don't understand how
it works. I can confirm it works. I've done it myself.
You have?
Yeah, it works.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's so cool though. But so this hub world, you would explore Peach's castle and find the different paintings. And some of them were straightforward. You know, it would just tell you, okay, you need 3 power stars to get in through this door. And then once you open that door, then you see the next painting. Some of them, you just kind of explore the castle and you'll find others. For example, like Big Boo's Haunt, you just have to kind of explore the grounds around it and you find a secret area to get to Big Boo's Haunt. And the thing that like really stuck in my mind, the thing that really like just captured my imagination was the paintings. It was the idea of walking into, like jumping into a painting and it just transport you to a different world is so, such a fun idea. Like I just love that as I don't want to say literary device because this isn't necessarily literature, but it's kind of like that concept really speaks to me on a personal level. I think it's something that kind of reminds me, I used to love I still like them, but the Narnia books, how, you know, they would walk into the wardrobe and now they're in Narnia in this beautiful big open world. And I think it kind of scratches that same itch where it's this painting that you jump into and now you're in this big open new world. And I remember when I was a kid, so I didn't own any of these, like I said. And when I was a kid, I would play this game at a church friend's house. And I remember the castle scared me because you walk in the door. And I didn't know anything about this. I didn't know anything about Super Mario 64. But when you walk in the door for the first time, Bowser just said, and as a 5-6 year, how old was I when this came out? I would have been 7 when this came out. So like probably 7 to 9 years old when I first played this. But a 7 to 9 year old kid walking, like opening it up and you hear that creepy laugh. I remember it freaked me out real bad. I'm like, what is this place? And there is music in the castle, but for some reason as a kid, I don't remember there being any music in the castle. I just remember the hollow steps of Mario, like trekking across the stone floor, the sound.
Maybe it was a glitch in the Matrix.
I know, right? I'm sure there was actual music. I just don't remember it. But so yeah, you would walk through and I remember like going into, like opening the doors, I'm like, there's just so many doors. How do I know which one to go into? Like it was this weird, mysterious thing that I just could not wrap my little head around. I just didn't understand it. Now as an adult, I'm like, well, I was fucking stupid. It's just a castle with doors. Just go through a couple of doors.
So here's a little fun fact. So Miyamoto actually, he enjoys American children's shows. He finds them unique. Okay. So the jumping into the painting was actually taken from Blue's Clues, Skidooing.
Well, that doesn't make any sense because Blue's Clues.
No, I just made it up.
I was like, what are you talking about?
No, they came. All right. So I know they came around the same year, but obviously the Super Mario 64 was in development prior to that.
No, you're right. I didn't know Blue's Clues came out in 96. Oh my God. That's crazy. I didn't know that. Wow. That show was that old.
Yeah. Nuts. That's no, but that was a stupid joke. But I do.
You played it so serious. I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about?
I do think it's pretty fascinating too, and it's a unique way. Other than the previous Mario titles, where he just, I mean, Super Mario Brothers and Super Mario 2, they just go right into the next level. In 3, he can move around a little bit, but you can't go back and play a level, at least the NES version. And then World, you can, gives it more freedom. But this, it's kind of like, all right, let's jump into a painting and see what it's like behind and within that painting. It's like its own little adventure. It's pretty neat.
Well, and the fact that they hid other levels in Peach's Castle, it wasn't like the hub wasn't just to other worlds. It was also to their own individual. Like the hub itself was its own individual level/world that had multiple stars that you could explore and find. Like the one that always sticks out to me that's like, it's a cool hidden thing. There's two actually that stick out to me. One, if you climb up to like the one part of it, I forget exactly how you get up there, but you have to climb up and you jump through the stained glass window. It's a hidden level that you want. It looks like a stained glass window, but in actuality, it's an entrance to a level. Also, when you're in the foyer at the very beginning of the castle and you look straight up into the sun that's above it, to the sun mural that's above it, it transports you to that flying level, which is smart because it's kind of like that flying level gives you a really basic arena to test out the flying mechanic. It gives you this wide open space for you to kind of fly around and teaches you how to use the flying cap, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah.
And actually, that's a good segue into some of the different power-ups you're given in this. You get the fire flower. You can, you know, shoot fire. Wait, do you? Can you shoot fireballs?
I don't recall. I'm replaying it right now, but I haven't come across it. But even 10 years ago, I don't remember. I don't think so. I feel so stupid, you know, being someone that's a huge, you know, Super Mario fan. And this is one of my least knowledgeable games.
That's okay, man. So you get the Vanish Cap, which lets Mario transport like a kind of like just drift through porous objects, you know, like fences and other stuff like that. The wing cap, the metal cap. I'm trying to look at the list, but there's a bunch from the Super Mario 64 DS game, which we'll touch on a little bit, but there's really not much to talk about. But yeah, that's pretty much it. It's the metal cap, it's the wing cap, and it's the vanish cap. And of course, the one-up mushroom. The one-up mushroom. So it just kind of... It pared down a lot of the power-ups because, you know, in Mario Brothers 3 and Super Mario World, you had so many. This one, you only really have 3. And like I said, they're all timed, which I think was such a smart, deliberate choice for the time because to account for all the possibilities that a player could do when there was nothing that they had, there's no precedent that they could point to that players a lot of times do this or players a lot of times do that. They didn't have anything like that. So they had to be really... They had to limit everything so much in order to make sure it was fair and balanced and whatnot. And the wing cap was fun. The metal suit was cool. I think the vanish one was my favorite just because I like the idea of kind of drifting through different things, like drifting through walls like a ghost. I thought that was a cool idea.
The other thing I thought was really unique was it wasn't a power up, but it was a feature where the only time it pops out, and it might only, I know it happened to me a lot in the Shifting Sands land where I don't know the name of the creature, but the vulture, if it steals Mario's head, he starts to get injured. Oh. That's never happened before. Yeah.
I think that might have been, if I remember, I think that might have been probably Lethal Lava Land? No, that's not Lethal Lava Land. I would guess it's Shifting Sand.
Yeah, Shifting Sands of the Pyramid.
Yeah, yeah. Shifting Sandland. No, and so...
Klepto, like that's his name. Klepto. That makes sense.
That makes a lot of sense.
That makes a lot of sense.
It, I didn't even know that was in there. It's something I didn't experience when I played. He never stole my hat, at least not that I remember. When I was a kid and played it, I never got very far in that game to begin with, unfortunately. Mm. I never got far in 64 to begin with. I obviously beat it a year or two ago, but yeah. So the power-ups, there's nothing really to write home about. It's just three different ones. They're fine. I think the wing cap and the vanish cap are really cool. The metal cap, I know a lot of people love, but I always found it annoying that you couldn't jump too well in it. And it, like, I get why it was cool, because you could sink to the bottom of the ocean or sink to the bottom of water. And that would help you get to different places. I don't know, something about it I just did not like. I forget what else they, like, those power-ups were good for, but yeah, I mean, like, it was fine, but like I said, they just had to limit it so much because of the 3D atmosphere. So in any case, moving on, one of the things I want to talk about next is, I didn't get to talk about it during the control, so I want to bring it up now before I forget, because one of the problems that a lot of people have with controls are the exact same thing that you mentioned, was the camera. The camera was so rough. It was so rough around the edges. And admittedly, you know, they didn't really have much else to compare it with at the time, but you know, the N64 only had one joystick. So it's not like you could do this smooth, fluid thing with a second joystick like we have now. So they used the C buttons, and Miyamoto apparently did not like the C buttons all that much. He actually wanted a second D-pad where the C buttons were at, which I actually don't think would have been a good idea. I think the C buttons are good because it differentiates it enough than having, like, well, which D-pad am I supposed to hit, the one on the left or the one on the right? Unless you make it visually distinct, which at that point just would seem silly to me. So if you're going to make it visually distinct, just make it the C buttons. Mm-hmm. But they tested out thousands of camera systems, thousands of them. And the only one that Miyamoto liked, they tested out a bunch and they finally found one that Miyamoto liked. Before they implemented it, they found out that Sega had already had a patent on that specific camera system. Of course, right? Yep. So they were left with a choice. Find another one or find some way to get it to work. Find a way to use it legally. Well, they decide neither of those two, and I'm paraphrasing, but they basically were like, fuck it, we're going to include it and hope we don't get sued. And they did, and they did not get sued. They included it, and Sega never sued them. They never, which is weird because Mario 64 was huge. So yeah, like, how would Sega not notice?
That's very strange.
Here's my theory. I don't know why they wouldn't. The only thing I can think of is that maybe Sega just couldn't afford a lengthy legal battle. But because at the time, if you're thinking 1996, Sega had just been crushed by the Saturn failing, and they're trying to develop the Dreamcast, most likely in 96, because it was only 3 years out from the Dreamcast being released, or actually 2 years out in Japan, because it came out in late 98 in Japan. So it's crazy to me to think that they didn't try to sue, because that could have been if they could have gotten some money out of that, you know, that could have helped them out a lot. So I wonder if they were just like, they didn't notice, or maybe they just couldn't afford a legal battle at the time because they were hurting so bad from the Saturn failing along with the 32X failing. That's a topic for another episode. There's a lot of problems that Sega had because they decided to release two 32-bit consoles within 6 months of each other.
Famous words of AVGN. What were they thinking?
Oh my God. It doesn't make any sense. It's a bummer because the Saturn wasn't awful and neither was the Dreamcast, obviously, but it just bad timing all around. Like, at least with the Saturn, I can 100% blame Sega of Japan for how it was, because the launch of the Saturn was botched and it was competing with itself with another 32-bit Sega console, which is just dumb. So they split their market. The Saturn was just bad timing. Sorry, the Dreamcast was just bad timing because it came out September 99 and October of 2000 is when the PS2 came out, and it just, PS2 trounced it. I made a post about it today on Instagram, and I looked at it. October of 2000 is when PS2 came out, and the Dreamcast was discontinued in March or April of 2001. So it was like 6 months later that they're like, yep, we're done. we're done, or 5 months later or something like that, we're like, we're done. We can't support this anymore. So that's how fast it went down after the PS2 launched.
Incredible.
But in any case, so yeah, I just thought that was interesting that they released a thing that was breaking patent law. Like they could have been sued for for not honoring Sega's patent, but they decided to say fuck it and just go with it anyway. Some other cool little facts that I looked up, some of the early prototypes, because this was the first N64 game that went into development, period. There was no other N64 game that did. And in some of the early prototypes, before they had a sound for Mario and a lot of the sound effects in, they dubbed in samples from Mel Blanc, the voice actor of Looney Tunes, you know, Bugs Bunny, Yosemite Sam, like all these iconic characters. And they kind of dubbed in a bunch of his sound effects for Mario instead, which I thought was kind of fun. And this game was so closely tied in development to Ocarina of Time that if you look at Mario 64's castle, it's not the same as Ganon's castle in Ocarina of Time by any stretch, but you can definitely tell there's some influences between the two. Just visually, they look kind of similar from the outside. And they shared a lot of assets with each other. And there's, in fact, a lot of puzzles that didn't make it into Ocarina of Time wound up in Mario 64. And then one of the last tidbits before I want to move on to talking kind of about the overall visuals and the aesthetic and the music is one of the things they wanted to add was a split screen mode. And to kind of harken back to what I said at the beginning, you know, like the L is real. There's a lot of like, how can I describe this? There was a lot of urban legends surrounding Super Mario 64 and a lot of misheard lines like the so long Bowser, so long gay Bowser sounded like so long gay Bowser. And I didn't want to include that, but,
yep.
But the L is real 2401 was a urban legend or basically on the fountain in the Eternal Star statue, which was in the fountain inside Peach's castle. It looked like it said L is real 2401. And that's not actually what it said. It was supposed to say something different. I forget exactly what it was supposed to really say, but it did not say L is real 2401. But this led to people just speculating for years that there's a way to get Luigi. Like there's some secret thing that you can do to get Luigi and you can play him in the game. And the reason I bring all this up because they wanted to have Luigi in the game but couldn't, and they wanted to offer a split screen mode for one player to play as Mario and the other to play as Luigi.
I saw a funny meme, like when Ben Carson was running for president 4 years ago, someone made a meme that he was on CNN. It was just a still picture of him like talking to a reporter, and on the bottom it said, Ben Carson : I unlocked Luigi in Super Mario 64.
that's funny. So this led to a bunch of different theories, though, like that the 2401 represented every gold coin in the game. So if you collected all 2,401 gold coins, you would unlock Luigi, and the player would have to come back to a statue where Luigi would then emerge as a playable character. And this is reading off the Mario Wiki, the Wiki fandom. While there were many theories as to what the inscription could mean besides the one above, the most popular and logical theory is that it was a reference to the Paper Mario game. The game was released in America on February 5th, 2001, very close to the date written on the inscription 2020401 or 2401. And Luigi was a character in that game. There's some unintelligible text under the message that might say in Paper M, although at the time Paper Mario was known as Super Mario RPG 2 and blah, blah, blah. So there's a whole bunch of stuff. Apparently, to all the different questions that were going on, IGN even offered a $100 bounty to prove that Luigi was not in the game. Because this rumor was so rampant. It was crazy. Now, here is the craziest thing. There was a big Nintendo leak this summer.
Yes, I remember this.
And they found in the Super Mario, I don't know if they had the source code, but at least in some of the code, it was from Super Mario 64. And they found the code and model for Luigi in Super Mario 64. That was found on July 25th, 2020, which was 24 years and 1 month after the release of the game, which is 2401. So that's insane. that it just linked up that way. And I bet you, like, the person who leaked it just kind of, like, they found it. Like, you know, I'm going to hold on to this till
there had to have been.
It has to be.
Way too coincidental.
Like, what are the odds, you know? Yeah. It's just so funny. And there's other stuff, you know. It's one of the things, I did an episode on video game urban legends, and I don't think I included this one on here because I included some like creepypastas, but it is something to think about. There's a lot of weird stuff. You can check out, if you just Google Ellis Real 2401, you'll find out, you can learn more about it. I believe, now I got to see like if I can even figure out, hold on.
So going to the creepypastas, I know we were talking in between segments here, and that was actually one of the things I wanted to show you. It's a very brief video, but I know one of the creepypastas that came out a few months ago, I think over the summer, is every Super Mario 64 card is personalized, and there's always something really creepy within it. And there's this YouTuber named Greenio who makes these videos that look like they were filmed in the 90s of him playing the beta of this game. And I just have to, I like the backstory behind it, I just have to show you. I can't really explain it, but it's really well done, and it's really unsettling, some of them.
That's great. I mean, listeners, go check that out then. So what, it was a creepypasta, and what was the creepypasta called again?
So the creepypasta itself, you can find it on Google. It's called Every Copy of Mario 64 is Personalized.
Okay. I'm going to have to look up that up. Yeah. I'm going to actually Google it right now. Oh,
one of the videos I want to send to you after.
Yeah, send it to me after we're done recording. Yeah. That's, I see one is like 16 minutes long. But in any case, so yeah, I just wanted to talk about some of those because there is a lot of interesting creepypastas and video game, like that is an actual like video game urban legend and myth. And that type of stuff spread all around the playground, all over the place. We're not just Mario 64, but other games. I remember, but like, you know, you would always have like, especially in like Zelda and stuff like that, there'd always be like someone say, well, my dad works at Nintendo and he tells me this or something along those lines. Or of course, the more pervy one that if you find the right cheat code, you can see Lara Croft without her top on. Oh, the 90s.
I love those what do you call them, playground rumors.
I know, right?
Yeah.
But all right, so let's talk about the visuals and the music. The visuals I think are fantastic. I think the game still looks good overall. I mean, it's definitely very dated. Like Mario's model doesn't look fantastic, but I think the actual overall art design still holds up pretty well. Like it's still pleasant enough to look at. Maybe it's my nostalgia for a simpler time, or like the 90s in general, because I don't have nostalgia for this game, like I said, but maybe it's my nostalgia for the 90s overall and just those style of graphics overall. But I think it, I don't know. What do you think? Do you think it holds up decently?
I kind of share the same sentiment as you. I mean, for its time, it was definitely groundbreaking, in more aspects than one. Looking back today, it's not the best, but the gameplay, and like I said, I appreciate the game a lot more today than I did when I was a kid, but it's still a great game. And that alone, in my opinion, which I'm sure you agree, gameplay over graphics. But you know, I kind of share the same thought process as you. It's just it's dated, but you know, I look past it because it's still fun.
And the music is, I think the music holds so up catchy. Better.
Yeah.
Dude, Bomb on Battlefield is one of the best songs. Their file select song, that actually, you know what? There is a fucking great remix of that song, which I'll send to you after the episode, but it's also going to be the outro music for this episode. It's by Hyperpotion. It's a really good remix. It's one of my favorites. I'm definitely going to be using that for this one. But you know, just the music is so timeless in it, and Bob, I don't know. I can't describe it. I love the fact that in the Mario 3D All-Stars on the Switch, it lets you play all the different soundtracks. Like you can listen to Mario Galaxy, you can listen to Sunshines, you can listen to Mario 64s. And Mario 64, it still sounds good. And it's a good example of what a good composer and sound designer can do with limited hardware because the N64 did not have the best sound chip. Period. It always sounded kind of muffled. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
The PlayStation, it was Redbook audio. It was CD quality audio, and you could like, it was. I mean, that was the first console that allowed full orchestrated scores in their games. Medal of Honor is the famous example of that. And I mean, don't get me wrong, like Mario had that, but it was all synthesized music. Same with Zelda. Like it was all these synthesized instruments. It still sounds good, but it just, you know, it didn't quite have what they could do on the PlayStation. And it shows because you couldn't even do speech on it. There was no streaming audio. So you had, at least I don't think it was streaming audio. There's weird specific technical specifications that I've learned about through other podcasts. I just can't remember for this one. But you couldn't really do, I mean, you could do, actually speak, I'm sorry, because Charles Martinet did the voice of Mario in this. I'm thinking of streaming video. You know how like with Final Fantasy and like PS1, they had these beautiful like CG rendered cutscenes and everything. You couldn't do that on the N64 because of the way that it was designed and whatnot. But no, one thing I want to talk about before we kind of start wrapping up is there's two things I want to talk about before we wrap up. One is the startup screen, Mario's face. That was such a great design choice to make the face playable, to allow the players to grab Mario's nose and have him like interact and he'd be concerned about what was happening. Like, oh God, they got my nose. Oh God, that's my ear. You could like mess with his eyebrows. You could mess with his mouth. You could touch his mustache, which sounds really weird out of context. you could do all these different things, and it was just such a cool playground. And all of it was stupid. It didn't do anything other than just let the people just kind of dick around on it. But it was such a good playground to kind of ease people into this idea of 3D.
Yeah, no, I even today, like I still have a lot of fun with it, and it's stupid, but I love it. I mean, when I say stupid, like it's
in a good way,
in a very good way. Yes, definitely not a bad way by any means. It's like, oh my gosh, this is nothing special, but I'm having fun with it. So,
well, and the menu screen was actually, so the company that worked, that made the graphics chip for the N64 was SGI Silicon Graphics, I believe. It was Silicon Graphics. They were the same people who did the graphics chip for the N64. So on the dev kits for their stuff, the way that their dev kits would look is very similar to how the file select screen on Mario 64 looks, where it's kind of like this embossed kind of bevel around this little square button. So it looks like it's kind of like a 3D button that's looking up at you. And when you would click on it, it would flip over. It was very similar to what the SGI or Silicon Graphics workstations used for their, you know, development kits. And the N64 almost didn't become the N64 because the Silicon Graphics, the company that gave them the chip, originally pitched their card to Sega. And this was in, I want to say, 1991. And so, or 1991, or let me think. I think it was actually 93. I think it was in 93. And so they pitched it to Sega, and Sega turned it down. So when they brought it into Nintendo, Nintendo liked it and signed the deal. And that was, you know, I think it was like 91 or 92 actually that this happened. So that's how early in advance the N64 was in development. Like it was like a year after the Super Nintendo launch, and they're like, all right, time to start working on the next console, start planning it out. And the N64 almost wasn't what it was because it could have gone to Sega, which who knows what would have happened in that case, you know? Who knows where it would have gone. And the last thing I want to say before we kind of do our closing thoughts is, actually this is, yeah, we'll do this before my closing thoughts. So there was going to be a sequel to this game, and there was a famous tech demo for the GameCube that everyone was raving about that they thought was going to be the next Mario game. And it was called 128.
The 128, yep.
Now here's the thing. That was a legit idea that Miyamoto had, but he wanted it to be a darker, edgier version of Mario who like didn't smile, quote unquote. Who Miyamoto actually said that he wanted him to smile less. And they were pitching this so much as a more adult Mario game that to promote this game that wasn't even out yet, or wasn't, I guess it was in development, but it wasn't even out yet. He did an interview in Japanese Playboy. Miyamoto did an interview in Japanese Playboy. I can't believe it. Who would have thought there was a Nintendo of all companies in the 90s, you know, back in the 70s, maybe because they had their love hotels. Did you know that?
No.
So yeah, Nintendo, before they became a toy company and then obviously eventually a game company, they were literally just throwing shit at the wall, trying to figure out like, what's this next market we want to jump into? Because they were kind of, I guess they were trying to get out of the Hanafuda card business.
Yeah.
And they bought a chain of love hotels. A little interesting. So yeah, Nintendo's got a pervy past, unbeknownst to us. But any case, so yeah, he did an interview in Playboy of Japan, and yeah, that game never came to fruition. A lot of its mechanics most likely got ported over to like Galaxy and Sunshine and Odyssey.
Yeah, I know.
Nintendo never throws out ideas.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I was reading a long time ago that I know the display, it was kind of like a beta test for Super Mario Galaxy, and I know that they scrapped the idea for the sequel and kind of just made it into Super Mario Sunshine. But like in terms of like the movement and the gameplay and the like controls and functionality, I know a lot of that was, you know, shown in Super Mario Galaxy.
Oh, really? With 128?
Yeah, 128.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
But anyway, so let's wrap up this episode of Still Loading. What are some final thoughts you have on the game? Like, what is your final verdict? If for someone who has not played this game and is curious about trying it out, what would you say to them?
For its time, it was definitely groundbreaking. If this is someone who's never played it before, I would advise going to a more recent 3D Super Mario title.
I agree.
If they want to give it a shot, just bear in mind that, you know, for its time, it was groundbreaking. It's still fun regardless, but the camera can be broken at times. But overall, it really, really depends on, you know, the player and what they think of it. But it's overall, it's not a bad game by any means.
And I'd agree with your assessment, man. Like, I was talking to somebody today and they were asking, like, I've never played a 3D Mario game. They played a lot of the 2D stuff, but they said they never played a 3D one. I said, I would start with Odyssey. Because in all honesty, while some games I actually like more than Odyssey, I think Odyssey is the game that perfected 3D Mario controls more than any other one prior. I told them I wouldn't necessarily jump straight back to 64 or Sunshine, but start with Odyssey and then pick something else. Galaxy 1 or 2, maybe one of the 3D worlds. Even though that's kind of like a weird hybrid of between the two. 3D World actually kind of sounds more along the lines of what they originally wanted Mario 64 to be. Just, you know, going to a flagpole. But I feel like they did it in a really unique, fun way. And that worked out really well. But in any case, I would definitely suggest starting out with a newer one first. But it is arguably the most important 3D platformer ever. Obviously not the best ever, but one of the most important games ever, just because it was of finding a way to bring a 2D 2D game design and or a 2D game and find a way to make it work in 3D. And I think even Miyamoto said, like, you can't, all the philosophies that we learned, I'm paraphrasing, mind you, this is just kind of like how I interpreted his interview, but all the philosophies and like design choices that they learned, all the design aesthetics they learned through 2D design, they had a kind of throw out, because 3D game design is just such a different beast. And I can't imagine having to design a game from scratch with no frame of reference for other 3D games. You have no, it's not like you can say like, oh, I want it to be like Ratchet and Clank, or oh, I can want it to be like Jak and Daxter. Oh, I want it to be like Super Mario 64. Now, you know, Crash Bandicoot was, I believe, came out beforehand, but they had never really, it was 3D and it was a 3D platformer, but it was still very much in a 2D mindset, because Crash is, you know, it's a very linear hallway of you jumping and trying, and they did, you know, they did a good job, but it wasn't a fully open 3D world. And Mario 64 is by no means the first 3D platformer, but it is probably the most important, because it showed how to make a 3D platformer viable and fun. Yep. And it set up a lot of design choices that people still look at. In fact, I'm a huge Jak and Daxter fan. They cited specifically Super Mario 64 because after they finished, after Naughty Dog finished Crash Bandicoot, they went on to Jak and Daxter. They were incredible. They were floored by what they saw in Super Mario 64, and so they wanted to create kind of that idea of like this big open world. And Naughty Dog did. They achieved that in Jak and Daxter, but they really took a cue from what Super Mario 64 did and learned from Nintendo. And that goes to show, like, right there, like, that if you don't have Super Mario 64, you don't have Jak and Daxter, which in turn might not get Uncharted and Last of Us, and who knows what other games wouldn't exist because of it, or without it, excuse me. But in any case, well, Casey, thank you so much for joining me for this episode of Still Loading. This was a good time. We're going to be doing Super Mario Sunshine next. It's been a while since we've recorded. We were talking off mic. We haven't seen each other because this is, like I said, being recorded in December, and we haven't seen each other since before the pandemic started in March.
Yeah, it's been quite a long time, and now I appreciate you keep me. I appreciate you always keep me in mind for this, and I always have a lot of fun doing it. So.
Again, well, I'm hoping we can hang out again outside of just the podcast stuff, just because who knows when this pandemic will, and I can't wait for it to be over, but we will have to be patient until then. So Casey, is there any place that you would like people to find you online? Is there any social media you'd like to plug?
Yeah, sure. If anyone's interested in looking at, I guess, my gaming collection, and of course you're going to see a lot of Super Mario memorabilia there. You can follow me on Instagram. It is TK_KazuyaKane. That's KazuyaKane. And I just post a lot of nonsense. I'm a 30-year-old child, so Josh understands.
Oh, I'm a 31-year-old child. I'm right there with you.
Yep.
I'll still be 31 when this episode comes out. I was trying to think my birthday is.
Oh, actually, yeah, I'll be 30. Too. I'll be 31 when this comes out too. Yeah.
Oh, damn. Okay, well, here we go. as usual, you can follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at StillLoadingPod on all of them. If you want to reach out to me, you can contact me, StillLoadingContact@gmail.com. If you want to support the show, you can do that in a number of ways. You can go to Patreon, patreon.com/StillLoadingPod. Even just $1 a month will help grow the show. And probably more importantly, though, if you want to help the show out, give it a 5-star rating review on Apple Podcasts or whichever podcasting app you use. That helps the show gain exposure and more people find it. So please consider doing that. Please send some nice words. I always like some nice words. And of course, the most important shout out, the Bit by Bit Foundation. The Bit by Bit Foundation is a nonprofit organization whose mission is to put video games and video game consoles in the hands of children receiving inpatient care at hospitals. If you want to check that out and consider donating, go to bitbybitfoundation.org. And that is all I have for you today. That is all that is there for Super Mario 64. Casey, thank you so much for joining me for this episode.
Thank you for having me.
And I will see you all next time.